Bree. But right now, it's time for the Early Music Show with Catherine Bott.
Hello. In today's programme, a conversation with one of the true legends of historically informed performance, a virtuoso of the harpsichord and organ, a conductor, musicologist, teacher and editor, Gustav Leonhardt. He holds a unique place in the revival of the harpsichord. So let's begin with the sound of him playing one, in music by the composer with whom he's so closely identified, Johann Sebastian Bach. The third and final movement from Bach's Harpsichord Concerto in D Major, BWV 1054, played by Gustav Leonhardt and the Leonhardt Consort. On a sunny May morning in a London hotel, Gustav Leonhardt, with his 83rd birthday just a fortnight away, was dressed for much colder weather. His slender build and aquiline handsomeness are, at first sight, quite austere. But he greeted me with grave courtesy. And although I suspect that there wasn't a question I could conjure up that he hadn't heard before at some time during the last 60 years, the twinkle in his eye and his wry smile proved, I hope, that he quite enjoyed thinking up new ways to answer every one. It's a fairly standard beginning to an early music show interview, but with someone like Leonhardt, who's been playing the repertoire for so many years, the question of when and how he'd first discovered the music that has dominated his life was bound to produce a compelling answer.
My parents were extremely musical, no musicians. Before the war, you could put on a record, but we didn't do that actually hardly, and so there was music at home. My father flute, my mother violin, and I was put on the piano, but strangely enough, my parents, being amateurs, thought when we play a Telemann or a Bach, we need a harpsichord. They had read about it. So they ordered one. And there it came, and I was put on it and played my written-out continuo part. I can't remember much of that. So a lot of music I heard, and even some early music, although also with Schumann and Brahms, everything went on. And then during the last year of the war, when everything stopped, and I had even to hide for the Germans, because I had really officially to work in Germany, because I was just 16, I think. We lived in the country, so the worst of famine we didn't feel so much, luckily. But the greatest pleasure then was that there was no school. You couldn't go out. So a whole year without school, that was a marvelous thing. So that harpsichord standing there took me completely, and I repaired it and I tuned it all day long and played a little also. And then innocent age, I thought, I want to be a musician for Bach. My father was on the board of the Dutch Bach Society, which still is there and flourishing. So the Matthew Passion and the B Minor Mass in the early years of the war still, and before and after. My father took me there and even to rehearsals. So I really was soaked in Bach, and really that did it. Yeah. I think I wanted to become a musician because of Bach only.
Gustav Leonhardt playing a fugue from Bach's Sonata in D minor, harpsichord music by the composer who inspired the young Gustav in pre-war Holland. What about his next steps in musical studies after the war was over?
I was allowed, which is a big thing of my father, to study music. Yeah? He must have been very worried, because then to live on a harpsichord, it was unheard of. Just Landowska, you know, might have done that. But whew, how awful. And organ too, you know, organist, notoriously poor. Was not a nice prospect for him. Anyway, he let me study in Switzerland, and he could arrange with money exchange with everything, because of his firm had contacts from before the war with Switzerland. So I went there to Switzerland in 1947, and a land of richness, unbelievable. I really burst into tears coming in Switzerland. Rich, unbelievable. Anyway, I had a bicycle, and I had to fetch my Swiss money, very little, very well indeed that it was little, on the bicycle, doing about 60 miles every week to fetch my little envelope at that firm of my father's business relationship. So for 3 years I studied in Switzerland.
In Basel?
In Basel, yes, yes. Yeah.
And your teacher, one of your teachers, was Eduard Müller.
Yes.
And he was very against the idea of changing manuals on the organ just because you could.
As you say, in that period again, that was a very important thing to realize, that you can't make a piece suffer because of your own wishes to make variety or whatever. So the clean thinking and just analyzing a piece, where is a division or what a new section, can you make a manual change without disturbing one or two other voices? Huh? So that clean way of thinking, I'm very grateful to him to have learned.
Gustav Leonhardt, the organist in Sweelinck's Echo Fantasia in A minor, recorded on the organ of the Grote of St. Jakobskerk, Great St. James's Church, in The Hague. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, and Music and Conversation with one of the most distinguished figures in period performance, Gustav Leonhardt. When we talked recently in London, it was very clear that had Leonhardt Sr. had his way, the harpsichord might have been just a hobby for his son. But fortunately he relented, and Gustav studied for a professional career in music. I asked him what happened after he graduated.
Well, when I had my diploma there, my father, still worried, of course, but happy that I had a beautiful diploma, gave me one other year because he thought, if a musician, then a conductor. They can make a good living if they become famous, of course. And so he said, I should still follow a conducting course. And in Vienna, that was possible. Clemens Krauss was there to give a course at the academy. And so he sent me there and said, that's the last thing I do for you. And I offer you one recital that you can arrange yourself at the Musikverein in Vienna. So I went to Vienna, went three times to the conducting course. I didn't find that interesting at all, so I stayed away. But instead, I spent all day, 2 years long actually, in the library, looking at documents, using, copying by hand. Of course, you couldn't do anything else. And I still have advantage of what I then copied. I mean, really things that nobody else, I think, today still has seen. Some, of course. So that was marvelous for me. And then being a harpsichordist, I once was asked to fill in a player who was going to play the Fifth Brandenburg somewhere in Vienna. And the harpsichord man got ill. And somebody said, oh, there is a sort of young Dutchman around who plays the harpsichord. Let's have him. Huh? So I played that. Yeah. And then the director of the academy was there, and he seemed to be so impressed that he engaged me on the spot as a harpsichord teacher at the academy. So my father must have been very happy. And then I met Harnoncourt in Vienna, and I was there for 3 years, but the third year already I was half back in Amsterdam, where I was then appointed because I was engaged to play the Goldberg Variations in the Concertgebouw. And again, because of that, I was engaged to be professor in Amsterdam.
And that was a position that Gustav Leonhardt stayed in for around 40 years. During his career, he's made no fewer than three recordings of the work that got him that job, Bach's Goldberg Variations. Let's hear some of them now from his 1978 recording, Variations 25 to 30.
Thank you.
The final six of Bach's Goldberg Variations, played by Gustav Leonhardt. We've already heard three examples of the genius of Bach, pinpointed by Leonhardt as the reason he wanted to become a musician in the first place. And he's said in the past that Bach's music is serious and that it's worked out on the highest level. What exactly does he mean by that?
Well, I think genius can appear in many ways. And it can be combined by simplicity or by worked out complicated workmanship, both. And perhaps an example of the first, the early Mozart, I think, to me, is an example of genius, and you cannot understand where is it. It is so simple, almost banal, and it is absolutely glorious. It's right. Well, Bach is the contrary. His workmanship is so incredibly clever and complicated, but that is not the reason why he is a great composer. Again, genius is a miracle. So it is extremely enjoyable for a musician to play Bach, because your mind also is at work. Analyzing it is extremely important, sometimes complicated, and even sometimes you don't know what to have to do, what Bach intended, which I think never occurs with Mozart.
Thank you.
The righteous must always sow the light, a chorus from Bach's Cantata No. 195. The soloists were treble, Jan Patrick O'Farrell, alto, René Jacobs, tenor, John Elwes, and bass, Harry van der Kamp, with the boys' choir of Hanover, directed by Heinz Hennig, Collegium Vocale, directed by Philipp Herwege, and the Leonhardt Consort, directed by Gustav Leonhardt. An all-male soloist line-up there, as it would have been when Bach first conducted that cantata, which leads neatly into the question I put to Gustav Leonhardt. How important is it for performers to reproduce what we think were the composer's intentions?
It's of the greatest importance. It's even essential. So I think today, when we know better about Bach's circumstances and of his period, I think nobody should dare to play Bach on the piano. I think I'm getting angry because it shows that they shut them off. I don't want to know about it. It's like the Pope who didn't want to know about Galileo's. He didn't want to know. That's the same attitude of pianists today. And we know a work of art only by its exterior. Titian painting, the colouring. If you change something of that, you change everything. So it may be banal, but really the banal things, the outside, is the only way that we can indicate the inside, whatever that is. Yeah? So if you change the outside, you change the piece. And that you shouldn't do. It's somebody else's creation and not your own.
Well, tell me about, let's go back to your life story and your career. You met Nicolaus Harnoncourt in Vienna. You met other people back in Amsterdam. There was Franz Bruchen. There was the violinist Marie, whom you married. And slowly the Leonhardt consort evolved.
It was five strings and a harpsichord. So we played mostly 17th century music.
Yes, you were pioneers of the music of Bieber, for example.
Yes, for, I hope
nobody
so.
Nobody was playing him in the 50s.
No. And Schmelzer and all these people. Yes, and also many English, Gibbons, Lupo, Cooperario we played then. That was marvelous. We didn't have many concerts, you know. The public was still small. We just survived, I think.
Did you think of yourselves as pioneers? Did people treat you as pioneers of Baroque music?
I didn't notice. I was so interested in music that I couldn't care less, as they say, whether it was liked. Probably I was partly considered as a fool or as a little god by some people who kept me alive. But I didn't care, no. It was just enough, the public, that I could survive. And it has grown, of course, you know, into the multi-millions over the world. It's amazing, within half a century. But then also the number of performers. So the difficulty now for young musicians of that early music movement is perhaps not bigger, not smaller. Then there was one player for 100 people, and now there are 100 players for 10,000 people. So difficulty is there, the same. And I think good ones always find their way.
A Fantasia by Giovanni Cooperario, or John Cooper as he started life in 1570, played by the Leonhardt Consort, featuring the subject of today's early music show, Gustav Leonhardt, playing the bass viol. During our conversation, Leonhardt showed a light and sure touch with trenchant statements. He's always been pretty outspoken about the superfluity of conductors, for example. We did visit his often expressed view that French music, although praised and enjoyed for its brilliance and wit, is comparatively insubstantial. Does Leonhardt still think that today?
No, I still think that's true. For all French art altogether, it's more they wanted to be pleasing, eh? Agréable. So why not? I mean, it's fine. Still, of course, there are different levels of seriousness, but not up to the level of genius, I think. Well, it's a private matter. Still, I think Louis Couperin is one of the greatest French composers with really some deeply touching elements. Huh? But there are very, very few.
Well, his music looks more inward.
Yeah. You know, Louis Couperin especially. It? Yes, yes.
Well,
whatever
praise.
That is, I don't know. I think if I had to mention in music, the finest French composer that I know from the 16th, 17th and 18th century, I would say Louis Couperin.
Gustav Leonhardt playing the Chaconne from a suite in C major by Louis Couperin. The end of our allotted time with Leonhardt was approaching. He's still a busy recitalist, and he had a plane to catch, so we returned to Bach. Although Gustav Leonhardt has devoted so much of his life to Bach's music, he's not a member of the discovery of laundry list more important than a new work school. In fact, despite having played the role of the composer in the film Diary of Anna Magdalena Bach in the 1960s, he's not particularly interested in Bach as a person.
Absolutely not. If you meet a genius, you don't notice that he is one. He's only a genius when he's at work, but not otherwise.
Well, after many years of being a fool, a pioneer, a little god, a great teacher and exponent of this music, a harpsichord virtuoso, what else is there left for you to do? Are you still continuing to explore?
Well, I don't know what to explore. If so, I would have done it already. So, still little problems coming up, trying to solve, but they are small. Huh? And what I hope still be able to do is to go on a little flourishing, because the public wants to hear it. Yeah, that's the only thing one can hope for. And then play as well as one can. Nothing else I can say.
Bach's Prelude and Fugue in A minor, BWV 895, played by today's guest on the early music show, Gustav Leonhardt. The programme was presented by Catherine Bott and produced by Sam Phillips. And the early music show now has its own weekly podcast featuring edited highlights from the programmes. Full details are available on the Radio 3 website.
The pizzazz of a mercurial Parisian organist. Composer and improviser of high renown, who makes his debut on the mighty instrument in the Royal Albert Hall. organ recital at the BBC Proms by Thierry Escaiche, juxtaposing his own works with those of Bach, Reger, Franck and Liszt. That's this afternoon on BBC Radio 3 from 4 o'clock.
That's in a couple of hours' time, it being 2 o'clock at the moment. Well, now there's another chance to hear Friday night's prom, which is introduced by Susie Klein.
Very good evening to you. Yes, tonight the Budapest Festival Orchestra is preparing to play music by two composers very close to the heart of tonight's conductor, Ivan Fischer, as he told me earlier.
Well, Liszt and Mahler, they are both daring innovators, I think. They were traditional composers of the time, people who, well, I wouldn't call them conservative, but who carried on a certain tradition, like Brahms, Dvorak, Tchaikovsky even. And they were clearly the pioneers, the people who wanted to change the world. And certainly Liszt was, maybe next to Berlioz, one of the most important ones. And this tradition of novelty led then to Wagner and especially Mahler. I think it's the same breed.
Ivan Fischer talking to me earlier today. Ivan Fischer, the founder and music director of the Budapest Festival Orchestra. So we begin tonight with music by Liszt, and he's at his most fiendish. It's the first Mephisto waltz. Let's not forget this is a composer obsessed for so much of his life with that grand romantic anti-hero, Faust. Liszt writes several pieces based on that legend, the legend of the man who sells his soul to the devil. Notably Liszt's Faust Symphony, of course. We heard that earlier in the proms this season. There are several Faust legends floating around during Liszt's time. This one is a particularly hectic, sexually charged one right up Liszt Street. Here comes Ivan Fischer, then, to conduct Liszt's Mephisto Waltz number one. Thank you.